Today, we hear from two teenagers who describe the difficulties of living in an area with gangs, knife crime, and massive inequality. And Helen Pidd, The Guardian's North of England editor, on why a funding crisis means schools are closing early.
So this is the Bolo Youth Centre in South Acton. It's 5 p.m, just after school, and suddenly the atmosphere feels really tense. Some gang members from Tottenham, about 50 miles across London, have been spotted in the area, and they've got a violent rivalry going on with some of the people that you can hear now.
That's why them lot started running.
So the Acton kids are weighing up how to react. One boy wanted to give chase, another guy told him not to. So it was so easy to see how the two groups could miscalculate here and something awful could happen. Then one of the guys said,
"Man, no one's got nothing on them, man.
Nobody's got any weapons, they were unarmed."
We're not in America, bro.
And the reason for that was that they were at the youth club and they weren't allowed to have weapons there. So instead of giving chase and ending up in a confrontation that could have led to someone being stabbed, and they just calmed down a bit and went back into the Bolo. And something that had the potential to be tragic had been averted.
The Bolobrook Youth Centre in South Acton is in an area of massive inequality, entrenched gang violence and knife crime. Leon and Ayanna, who are 18, have been going there for years. This is their episode. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in focus, the shrinking of the Bolo Youth Club. So Rob Booth, you're the social affairs correspondent at The Guardian. You and Josh Kelly, one of our producers here on Today in Focus, have been going to the Bolo for the last 4 months. How did you end up there?
Back in November, I'd been following the UN Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty, Philip Alston, on his tour around the UK. That was the one where he spoke about millions of children in the country being locked into a cycle of poverty from which most will have great difficulty escaping. And he talked about poverty in the UK being a deliberate political choice. And there was one meeting on his tour that really stuck out for me.
Further ado, I'd like to introduce you all to Professor Philip Alston.
It was when he was talking to a group of young people from West London about housing and cuts to youth services.
What would an ideal youth centre look like?
He wanted to know what they wanted from a youth centre, and their answer was quite surprising. They simply said they wanted space. They weren't that fussed about the way it looked or what the facilities were. They just wanted a place that wasn't at home, which might be overcrowded, wasn't school, and it wasn't on the street. And then he asked them,
any of you actually live in an area where a youth centre has been closed or has really cut back dramatically?
Ours is getting closed soon, I think.
Yeah.
And a big group of people shouted that our youth centre is getting moved and shrunk.
The class and generation.
They sounded so angry about it, and there was a girl called Ayanna who was basically screaming at Alston, begging him to tell the government ministers not to cut the youth centre back, their youth centre. So these young people were from the Bolobrook Youth Centre in South Acton, which is run by a guy called Colin Brent, who works for Ealing Council. And at the moment that they were talking to Alston, they were in the process of moving, because the council had decided that the site that they'd been in for years should be knocked down to make way for some new apartments as part of a huge regeneration of a big post-war council estate that's in South Acton. And they were going to get a new but much smaller site, about half the size of their existing youth centre, and it was going to be at the bottom floor of a new apartment block that had been built just around the corner. So I went and talked to a few of them afterwards and asked them if we could follow them around for a little while they moved.
Who did you meet? And who've you been with over this time?
We're in South Acton, innit? Bolo.
Yeah.
Bolo Youth Centre. This is the final days of this little building here.
So that's Leon. We've changed his name, actually, because he asked us to. And he was the first person I met, and he offered to show Josh and I around.
This is the main room, innit, yeah? This is like the kitchen. Yeah, it smells alright. Sometimes it smells a bit odd, innit? Because like some Donnies like to cook some weird shit in here. And then you got Lee Ban smoking a blem over there. You get food dust.
You allow this smoke blem?
No. You gotta be outside, innit? But obviously these lot earn some fuckery around here. But that's not gonna involve us because we're on a tour, so we keep it steffy. That's the thing.
There's like a studio on that, yeah. Like people recording. All right.
What you doing in here then, lads?
Writing a song.
Writing a song.
Yeah.
Can I have a listen?
That girl loves split in the middle. Nope. Just bend your back in and dig it. On your knees and get with it.
But yeah, that's the studio.
What happens here? What does it mean, this place?
Cool. Like, bro, you see Bolo, yeah? No one's saying it's fucking perfect. Yeah, there's people that smoke weed outside, didn't it? Yeah. Like, once in a blue moon, you'll see something mad happen. Do you get what I mean? Yeah. But it's like, cool, fam. Do you know what a youth club is? It's the long-term game. Because when you go there at first, it's just ping-pong, innit? You get what I mean? Then it becomes something else where you chill with your friends and you have discussions. Do you get what I mean? Then you start moving on to, like, when, like, you're my age, you're 18, bro. You talk to Colin about issues that actually matter. They try find you jobs. Do you get what I mean? They'll help you. They'll support you. They'll... Do you get what I mean? It's a place where you can vent your mental frustration. Bolo is a safe haven for a lot of people, innit?
Lovely, I love it. Listen.
We met Leon again on a freezing cold night in January, and the first place that he took us to was this sort of secret spot that he used to go when he was younger.
It's actually got a nice view.
It was the top floor of one of the tallest old council towers in the area, and anybody who knows about it can just get up there.
What are you like?
Oh. Not much.
Alright, these lifts have a tendency to get stuck. Look, tell me that ain't nice.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
That is nice, isn't it? Like, bro, there's things in South Acton that someone in Chiswick will never get to see. Because they'll never come to this block. And you get to see shit like this. It's nice, a lie.
So from the top of the towers, an incredible view, you could see most of London.
You can see central fucking London, bro.
Right across to the London Eye, but in the foreground was Westfield, the biggest shopping centre in Europe, just down the road. And then just over the railway tracks is Chiswick, where the average house price is about £900,000. And now this area where we were seemed to be changing too. The old council block was surrounded by smart new apartment blocks that were springing up around it.
You see those towers up there? Yep. So like those buildings, those were like the shittest blocks in South Acton, innit? But they've knocked them down. The ones down there by Bolo, they're like new. But these were like the first blocks to go up when South Acton got what do you call it?
Gentrified.
Yeah, gentrified, innit? All gentrified and that, yeah. Like, and everyone's thinking, raw, these are nice. You get what I mean? Like, people are excited about it, but I don't think they realise that they're going to start raising the rent soon, and then you're going to have to fucking move out and find somewhere new. And then, like, do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
If they just wanted to build more housing for people who needed council housing, yeah, they would keep these blocks and just try
build some more.
Do you get what I mean? Yeah. But they want to knock them down to raise the prices, so it looks more interesting to invest, so they can change this area to North Chiswick.
Instead of
South Acton. Do you get what I mean? Basically, I have like a story for every street corner in a way. It's weird, isn't it? So like that corner right there, yeah. Like I saw someone that I knew for like 4 years, yeah. Like someone carved their initials into his face because he was shot in here, innit? Shot in his like selling drugs.
Right.
He like literally carved broad daylight in front of carved an S and an I into his face.
You saw that happen,
I swear to God. Bro, it was deep. They told him, take your trousers down. It was out there in his boxes. They carved his face.
How old is the boy?
15, 16. I was like 12, 11 at the time, innit? So, there used to be a gang here called MDP, innit, yeah? And they used to be blue, innit? And like, you couldn't wear red around here. Like that was like, bro, like, I remember, yeah? My mum tried to get me to wear a red top around here. I was literally bawling my eyes out, crying, saying, no, I'm not going, I'm not doing it, because if I wear a red top around here, like someone's gonna clap me, bro. Like man's not doing that, fam. Like but I didn't tell my mum that, but I kept on telling her I'm just not gonna do it, innit?
Why didn't you tell your mum?
You don't want her to worry, innit? With mums, man, like they already have enough on their plate. You don't wanna add, and this is from young, you know not to worry your mum.
Yeah.
Even though, like, because what can she do?
you're living in the area.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? You can't move you out. I mean, like, you get used to it when because you see it from young, innit? You see violence from young. Do you get what I mean? So you kind of get desensitized to it. I've seen, like, three people get stabbed in my life, innit? Yeah. And, like, that's not a lot compared to a lot of people. Do you get what I mean? Like,
I'm interested by the fact that people around here, you guys, you're often on the fringes of gangs, if not in them, and that is quite a difficult place to be. Can you talk about that sense of kind of being sucked, the danger of being sucked into it, or the fear or the pressure?
Because for a lot of time the gang members are like the cool ones, you get what I mean? So a lot of kids, a lot of weak-minded kids who don't have that stability at home, they'll go to that literally as a family, do you get what I mean? You know, that's just how society is built. For a lot of working class people, they don't have father figures, or they have drug addicted parents. You get what I mean? It's a lot of bad stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, entrenched.
It's entrenched, isn't it, bruv? This gang culture thing is something that we got to live with now. There's no solving it.
What does it come from? What causes it?
It comes from poverty, a lack of education. It comes from a lack of stability in the homes. It comes from a lot of things. That's just how life is, isn't it? Do you get what I mean? Sure. Because when you haven't got nothing really like that, like you're, and you see, that's the thing. Chiswick is right over there. It's right down there. Do you get what I mean? Makes you think like, rah, why have they got it so good down there?
Yeah.
It's mad, isn't it? Like you see them driving past in their Bentleys. You see that they get on the same bus as you to go home, and from school, innit? And you're like, rah, these lot don't have the problems I have. These lot are going home. These lot are fucking having a full meal. Do you get what I mean? These lot are getting fed. And and all credit to my mum, innit? Like, bro, she fed me whenever she could. Do you get what I mean? But there's sometimes where there was it, she just no damn food. And sometimes there's no hot water. Like, do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to wake up in a freezing cold yard, yeah? Before school, you got to heat. You got to get a pan. You got to fill it up with water, cold water. You got to heat it up. Wait there for like 15 minutes. And imagine... You can bring up like 3 pots, yeah, of filled with water, and it's not gonna fill up your bath properly. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
You're still going, and it's still cold as hell.
Shit starts the day.
It's shit. You don't feel like learning. Do you get what I mean? Like this is the core root of the problem. Like you're not gonna want to get up and learn if you gotta wake up 30 minutes earlier than the next man, to heat up fucking pots, yeah, so you can take a bath.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you can do to fix that. Do you get what I mean? I have no fucking clue, because that is some systemic poverty. Do you get what I mean?
What you're describing is the experience that underpins the news when we hear about stabbings and killings and drug gangs.
Yeah, that's a bit that you don't hear about. You don't hear about why it happens. You don't hear about... You literally just think, oh, these kids, they're just going out and stabbing each other. And it's mostly portrayed as black youths, isn't it? Do you get what I mean? Yeah. I can't speak for every area, but the area that I'm in, it's not just black youths that do it.
So the Bollard's been an important part of your lives. You called it a safe haven, but now it's being moved, made much smaller. How's that going to affect things?
It's going to make problems worse, isn't it? Because if that's the place, that was kind of people's safe haven, do you get what I mean? And you're shrinking it. You're just squeezing it. I don't understand how that could benefit anyone, do you get what I mean? Bro, I don't know. It just seems so counterintuitive or something like that. That's why I think you need people from communities to represent their own community. Do you get what I mean? I'm not saying, you can't represent our community. You don't know what's going on. Actually, in a way, I'm saying that. You don't know what's going on here. The same way I don't know what's going on in your neighbourhood, bro. Like, the same way I don't know about the Chelsea Garden Festival and the issues that brings up. You don't know about gang violence and the issues that it brings up here. Do you get what I mean? How you have to look over your shoulder every time you see a ped. Do you get what I mean? You don't know about that. I don't even smoke weed. Do you get what I mean? But I'm paranoid. 24s when I'm walking in Acton.
So tell me a little bit more about the Bollo. Who's running it?
The guy who runs it's a guy called Colin Brent. He's a youth worker, originally from Bristol, but he's spent about 10 years in London. Everyone seems to love him. He's a very thoughtful, approachable kind of guy.
It really is Game of Thrones. I mean, so for example, around here we've got the Third Set gang, who none of them are really from South Acton, but they represent South Acton, but none of them actually live here. In Shepherd's Bush you have 12 Anti, who are currently beefing Northampton, East Acton.
His job's about a lot more than gang violence and knife crime, but in this area it does seem to take up a lot of his time.
Then you've got Mozart.
And that means he's completely immersed in the latest situations between different gangs.
You know, it's a really difficult position where actually increasingly young people who are quite mobile in some respects don't even know whose side they're supposed to be on anymore.
Colin usually finds out about beef before the police, and he has all sorts of techniques to try and diffuse tensions when violence looks possible. Sometimes that's just reassuring people when they've been made to look foolish, say on Snapchat or on Instagram. Sometimes it's persuading friends to convince other friends not to retaliate. Colin knows how to get messages out to other gangs in other areas of London to say that person A doesn't want the beef to go any further with person B, and that can de-escalate the situation. I suppose it's a form of diplomacy, really. But he says that the most important thing is simply for the youth centre to be there, just to exist.
No young people we work with really want to be in gangs. That's not... No one wakes up and says, you know what I want to do, I want to fear for my life. The vast majority of them want to get out and don't know how and don't know what there is for them to get out to. And so they get involved in drugs and they get involved in gangs and they get involved in alternative systems of power where they can be powerful. So there's this kind of chaos that people, that young people live within, and we try to be alongside them in that chaos.
This is a place where reality can kind of cut through it, right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, here we know them as individuals. We know what their living conditions are. We know, you know, so there's this identity of the, you know, the gang member who's this powerful kind of person that maybe someone else who's never met them will look up to. It's like, oh yeah, they're cool. And we know actually that maybe they go home and they sleep on a mattress, you know, on the floor in a shared accommodation. And they know that we know that, and they know that if they want to, they can come and they can break down on us, because the stress actually on them is immense. For some people, home is not a place where they want to be. These are not teenagers who can slam the door in their parents' face and stay in their bedroom, you know, doing whatever teenagers do in their bedroom, because they don't have a bedroom. They sleep on a sofa in the living room. They are having to fight and hustle to survive together in the same space, and that necessarily puts a lot of strain on people's relationships.
Oh, take me out. Oh, sorry to disappoint, Rob.
This is Ayana, also, by the way, not her real name. And this idea of overcrowding and a lack of space lying behind the other problems that Colin has been talking about is something that she has lived out. She was the one at the start of the episode who was shouting at Philip Olsen about the bolo being shrunken down. And she's good friends with Leon, and they were hanging out watching TV when she invited us round to her home, small single bedroom at the YMCA, the kind of place where people who find themselves homeless can live.
I used to live at my mum's house. At the time I was with my mum, my little brother and my ex-boyfriend and me. That's four people in a two-bedroom flat. My mum was in uni, so she would want to stay in the living room on the sofa and do her work all night. And she'd sleep on the sofa, tired the next morning, but then there's people getting up in the night, going to get food from the kitchen, and it's all linked. So, like, you're getting on each other's nerves continuously. Like, it was getting too much for her because my mum's got, like, depression and stuff. The relationship broke down. So one day I think I just came back home, and like my clothes were like all in the room coming up to like here. So then I just packed it and left. Like,
she'd thrown all out onto the floor.
Like, so there were, the whole room was just filled with clothes. I'd just hit 18.
After her mum kicked her out, she realised she was homeless and she went to the council, but she says they couldn't help her.
They was literally like, oh, okay, well, when I went there, you're not pregnant. You don't have a child already. You're not disabled, so you're not a priority. I slept on buses. Then I was like at my friend's house, and then obviously, you know, you can't really do that for too long. I was still trying to help myself. I was trying to go to viewings, trying to get a tenancy agreement, try to take it to the job centre and get like a normal flat. but it's not that easy. You don't have a reference, you're 18, they need first month's rent and deposit up front.
It must have felt desperate.
I used to walk around with, like, honest to God, about 20 bags of clothes. I felt hopeless. Like,
I mean, we were walking around the Bolo the other night, yeah, and looking at all the new development that's going on there, and there's tons and tons of housing being built around there.
Yeah.
And yet you've had this sort of awful struggle in recent months.
But it's not for us. It's not for us. That stuff there is not for us. Have you seen how do you think they will ever give me housing there?
So when you look at the what's going on around the Bolo, with the Bolo and those that housing, what, yes, do you think?
You don't have space at home, cool, you get up, you go to Bolo. But then, do you get it? Look what's happening, yeah, there now. They're trying to cut that off, or like they're making youth clubs smaller. So then you don't have space at home. You don't have space there. What are you going to turn to? You're going to go and try to find some type of, like, you're going to feel like you belong outside on the street, right? And that's why people have such strong ties to their ends, to like their area, because that's where they grew up, on the streets. So that's why you'll find all of these lot fighting over it, because their friends, their bros, their family, basically, it substitutes. Like, if you don't have something like that at home, you go out and you find it among your friends, right? So then you're willing to fight for it, right? For an area that your mum doesn't even literally own housing in.
Swish you home.
Yeah, man.
So it's 4 months after the Alston meeting, and it's the first day at the new Bolo. Colin, Ayana and Leon met us to show us around.
So what was it like?
Much smaller than the original Bolo, which is a sort of big, spacious series of spaces where you could kick a football around. This was inserted into the bottom of a new apartment block. It didn't seem like it was designed originally to be a youth centre, so there were several different rooms. There was a big staircase that took up a lot of the space, and there were strange little design features like a balcony that you couldn't even get to. I think the kids felt like they were getting something new and fresh, and they were quite excited about it, but when they were looking at it, they were a bit puzzled about how it was really going to operate. It didn't feel like the same sort of home that they'd had at the Bolo. Tell us about what do you make of this new place?
It's nice, isn't it? It's like, it's a bit small, isn't it, but it's still nice.
Yeah.
Like, not bad. You seen the toilets, man?
I haven't seen the toilets.
The toilets are fucking sick, fam. Looks like the Westfield toilets. Yeah, yeah. Oh my days. Alright, can we go see the toilets? Are you nuts?
The best
like
luxury. They actually are.
That's actually fucking look, they got the fucking button on the wall. Are you nuts? That is mental, fam.
What is the toilets? I haven't seen them.
Baby, innit?
Is it the girls?
No, that's the men.
Oh god.
You can go now.
Why is there only one?
Yeah, that's the shit. That's kind of a bit whack though.
But what about the size?
The
size is there's a lot of place to run around in the old place.
Yeah, but you see here like we don't even have like a 1-to-1 room or like nothing like that. Like a little room where you can just talk to people, or like you need to talk to, like, it's I feel like I'd rather have the old Bolo.
Colin, it's half the size. Does that matter to you in terms of what you can do?
Potentially, yeah. We will try to make it work. We will try to make this a home. What we won't get is the same volume of young people coming through.
You need to throw your net quite wide. Yeah. The wider the net you can throw your net, the better. And this is a narrower net. I mean, I always thought this was kind of a trite thing to say, the youth club thing.
Yeah.
You know, I always used to think, oh, here we go, the youth clubs again. The youth clubs are going to stop all the problems. Actually, having kind of investigated this a bit with you guys, it seems to me that that's exactly what we do need.
Yeah, and we need, it needs to be invested in. We are working often with young people who are incredibly vulnerable, and we have to have space to work with them, you know, physical and social space. It looks lovely, but there will be challenges.
Ayana, you remember when you spoke to Philip Alston?
Yeah.
I think you said to him that you were really excited about the fact that he was going to take what you guys had told him and tell a government minister about it.
Anyway, I'll do my best, and I think you'll read about it in the media.
I'm so
and
I'm just thinking, 4 months on, you're here in the youth club, which is half the size of the one that you were in before, and you're still in the YMCA.
Yeah.
Has anything changed since you met him?
Obviously, he did raise it, and I feel like he'd done a very good job of portraying everything that we did put forth to him, like, in his report, because I saw it. But I feel like they're taking the same approach as they do. Like, the government always just tried to, like, wipe something under the carpet and nothing's going to get solved, really. Like, there's no moving forward. Like I said, didn't it? I've said this to you before. Like, that's why people join gangs and things, because they feel that their opinion doesn't really matter that much. Nothing's really going to change. So they find that sense of belonging in the streets instead of where they should feel kind of like they belong. Yeah.
Less than 24 hours after we left, we heard that Ayub Hassan, a 17-year-old who attended the youth club, had been stabbed to death in West Kensington. Hassan was so slight, he was nicknamed X-Ray. His family said that he wanted to be a barrister. But last week, a 15-year-old boy was charged with his murder.
The Guardian contacted Ealing Council, who said that the council's government funding had been cut by 64%. They said the youth service budget had fallen from more than 1.8 million to under 800,000. Ealing is committed to ensuring provision is in place for young people, they added, but this loss of funding has meant that difficult decisions have had to be taken, with three part-time centres being forced to close. We remain committed to providing youth services and have three full-time youth centres, one of which is on this estate. You can read all of Rob Booth's reporting at theguardian.com. Coming up, the funding cuts forcing schools to close early on Fridays.
Hi, I'm Will Dean, editor of The Guardian Weekly. Since you're a Today in Focus listener, there's a good chance you'll love The Guardian Weekly. It's The Guardian's essential weekly news magazine, featuring a carefully curated selection of Guardian and Observer journalism to give you a global perspective on the issues that matter. You'll find leading opinion writing, analysis, long reads, and cultural coverage from around the world, with free worldwide delivery. So, if you think globally, now's the perfect time to start reading weekly. Visit gu.com/TIFGW.
Welcome back. Teaching unions say that school budgets are at breaking point, and head teachers are being forced to cut staff, scrap school trips, and even close early some days. The Guardian's North of England editor Helen Pidd has been following the story.
So Vale View is a large primary school in Reddish, which is a suburb of Stockport in Greater Manchester.
Hi Helen, it's Helen.
Oh hello, hi, from one Helen to another. I spoke to the head teacher Helen Hannah recently after she took a very drastic decision in order to balance the books at her school. She's taken the decision to close on Fridays at lunchtime at 12:45.
Unless there was a significant change in funding, if we don't make the choice around the Friday afternoon, what that means is that I would have to save a further £100,000, which would be further redundancies.
And parents have been told that if they are unable to pick up their children at lunchtime, they're going to have to pay £3.50 per child to cover the cost of an after-school club. So one of the reasons that many parents at Vale View reacted so badly to this proposal was because of something that the Chair of Governors said in a letter to parents when he suggested that actually many families would see this as a bonus, having some more quality family time to spend with their children, which seemed to not acknowledge the fact that, yes, many families would love to see their children more, but many parents have got to work. So Mrs. Hannah, the head teacher, feels that she's been left with no alternative option. And she says she's already looking at double-figure redundancies out of a staff of 90, even with the early closure. She's been at pains to point out that the school has already taken a lot of cost-cutting measures in order to save money. So when I spoke to Mrs. Hannah, she was pretty defiant in the face of very strong criticism from the community. But she has come in for a lot of flack. There was a big community meeting from parents who've gathered together and vowed to fight. They are lobbying their local MP as well as councillors, and they feel quite confident that they can get her to change her mind. The situation at Vale View is really one piece of the overall jigsaw of the school funding crisis. We heard from a head teacher who had been forced to clean her own school because she could no longer afford to employ a cleaner. There are others that have set up Amazon wish lists for essentials, such as pencils and paper. And then there's the more fundamental cuts to particularly special education services, where there are schools, for example, there's a few in Birmingham, which have said that they simply can't afford to take special needs pupils anymore and therefore are closing their special educational centres. The government maintains there's more money going into schools in England than ever before, but the Institute for Fiscal Studies has pointed out that total school spending per pupil has actually fallen by 8% in real terms since 2009, as the school population has gone up. It's clear that schools are under an increasing amount of pressure and feel that the government is not taking their plight seriously enough.
As a school, we're expected to do more and more. But the reality is, that's how it is. We see families in crisis struggling, and as a school, there's only so much we can do. But if we don't, who does? And ultimately, the children then don't thrive and shine and flourish.
That was Helen Pidd. My thanks to her and to Leon and Ayanna, Colin Brent and Robert Booth. Today's producers were Josh Kelly and Amy Walker. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executives are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. See you tomorrow.